You're listening to the KPCW Park Record Candidate Forum live here on KPCW from the Historic Theater. Thank you again to our sponsors, Tesh Law Office, Wasatch Beers, Squatter Pubs, and River Horse on Main. We're going to get to another lightning round question here from Len. A reminder that we'll be accepting questions from the audience, so if you have something, we'd love to have you here. And doing that, we're going to start that at about 8:15 or so. If you have a question you're listening at home and like to call one in, we've got Andy Bernhard, publisher of Park Record, taking your phone calls. You can give him a call at 435-901-8805. Also, Monica is monitoring the Twitter feed, so that is hashtag Park City. You can tweet a question to her, and she'll be happy to ask that question for you as well. So, Lynn, a lightning round question here.
Lightning round number four, yes or no? Speaking of congestion and transportation, should congestion in town, especially during that bewitching hour, during the ski season and at 4 o'clock, and during the time we have events the rest of the year, should we be mitigating that congestion by mandating mass transit to events and to our resorts? Yes or no, and why don't we start down at Alex?
Thanks. Yes.
Absolutely.
Mandating mass transit in terms of buses? Yes.
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 Thank you. Okay, Mary, we're going to start with you in terms of asking one of your opponents. I didn't ask you to come with a question for a specific opponent, but all four of you are running against each other. So your choice of who you get to like, who you'd like to ask, and I tried to clarify it earlier. If everybody asks Alex, we're going to try and mix things up
right,
or something. So
thank you. Appreciate
that. Let's get out.
You know.
I did want to ask Alex.
Sure.
I
knew I did. I thought he was the go-to guy. I just kind of felt that.
This is a water question. A lot of people have talked to me about the fact that people in the lower elevation pay for the water that is shipped up to, pumped up to the higher up around Montage. And is this fair? I realize that we have to give new developers water rights, but is it a tool, would it be a tool to assess people based on how far we had to pump the water if someone wanted to develop further up the hill so that the people in the lower areas were not paying their share of that?
Actually, I think that, I live at 6,800 feet and I don't pay a water pumping charge, so I was under the impression that only the people that lived at a high elevation had an additional charge on their water. So I never really thought about it. It's something I'd have to look at to see if there is that difference. Out in the county, I know they do that at Mountain Regional Water. They do have a pumping surcharge, and I do think they charge everyone. And there's a couple ways to look at it. I mean, one way is we live in a society where we all share costs. We pay for a bus system that some people don't use. We pay for other things that are beneficial to some residents and not to others. So I don't think it's a simple answer at the face of it quickly. Seems like a good solution if we're not doing it already.
Any response to that, Mary?
According to my research, we are not doing it already. And I think it would bear studying to see if it is an unfair load if someone wants to build at the top of the mountain and for everyone else to pay to help them be able to do that.
Thanks. Alex, a question, and to whom would you like to ask?
Tempted to ask Mary a question.
I'm ready.
And this is just the council candidates, right, that we're asking this?
Yes.
So for Tim, define sense of community. What does that mean to you? And is it sense of community or in the interest of our community to locate our middle class at Kimball Junction the way some people have suggested?
To do what with the middle class at Kimball Junction, Alex?
To locate.
Locate.
to locate the middle class at Kimball Junction?
Yes.
No, I'm not in favor of locating the middle class at Kimball Junction. And my definition of our sense of community is why all of us continue to choose to live here. It's not the easiest place to choose to live in, and we're all here, some of us after decades. I've been here 2 decades, and I started to feel like a local about 6 years ago. And I continue to make that choice to live here, and that's because we have an engaged citizenry that come out to events like this, get involved, formulate a vision. I was part of one of the early visioning plans at 1127 Woodside, one of the early renovations of a historic structure with Miles Radiman running it. We have the ability and the commitment and the desire in this community, which is part of what makes us authentic and unique, to vision, put in place a plan, and then execute that plan to bring us to where we want to be in the future. That's how we got here with 6,000 acres of open space inside city limits and 400 miles of single track trail in this area because we visioned it 20 years ago and executed on that plan. I think we've got to protect the middle class in Park City and not move them out to either junction or outside of city limits. I want to see the middle class remain in Park City. That's part of a diverse community. That's part of what makes us authentic. Thank you.
Alex, do you have a response to that?
I would just add that, well, first of all, it's well said, but I think the thing that creates a sense of community for us is we're inclusive. We're walkable. We're able to get out and talk to each other at places like Fresh Market and the Park City Market. So that's my definition of inclusive.
Thank you. You're listening to Community Radio KPCW Park City. Again, we're going to be accepting your questions in about 10 minutes here or so, maybe even less. All right, Mary, your question to one of your opponents. Excuse me, Cindy, I'm looking right at you.
Oh. Well, Mary, this is for you. You had mentioned earlier that you would be recusing yourself from decisions about Bonanza Park, and since that, you know, the redevelopment of Bonanza Park will be a major issue that we face in the next 4 years, do you think you can be an effective council person if you have to recuse yourself from some of our major decisions?
According to Mark Harrington, our city attorney, it's only the specific project that would be bordering ours. Bonanza Park runs from Bonanza to Park, to Kearns, to Deer Valley. So there are a lot of other areas. And in the general philosophy of the development, I would be able to participate. So it would only be someone along my border that I might be prejudiced against that I could not.
Any response to that, Cindy?
No. I trust Mary to do a good job.
Let me say we all trust the city attorney to do a good job as well.
All right, Tim, and a question for one of your opponents.
Alex, this is for you. This is kind of reminiscent of the question we got asked at the Park Meadows Forum, which was along the lines, if there was a threat and you had a magic wand, how would you deal with that? So my question, Alex, is if you were a superpower with if you were a superhero with special powers, what superhero would you be and how would you use those special powers in dealing with issues that confront us in Park City?
Wow, superhero. Geez, I don't know how you answer that question without giving it any thought.
I was a poop fairy during the Tour de Suds.
Well, you know, the tendency would be to say Superman, but that would be a little bit presumptive. I'm at a loss, which is pretty rare for anybody who's listened to me speak about anything. That's it. I got nothing.
So, Tim, what superhero did you choose?
Well, mine's a little non-traditional. I'd be Chief Seattle, and my special powers would be to vision out 7 generations and try to deal with our issues with that perspective.
Who?
I was kind of, what did you think? I thought like Katniss. I didn't even think superhero. I was thinking like that Katniss guy from the Hunger Games.
Yeah, well, right, but I just have a little different definition of superhero.
Yeah. Okay, let's see. Back to some questions for the mayor candidates. Andy, there's been talk, and we've kind of been through here, but this specifically deals with you and Treasure Mountain Inn. There's been talk of developing a gondola to Deer Valley Silver Lake Village from Park City's Main Street. And at this point, we know there are two preferred locations across the street from your place of business, the TMI, at the Wasatch Brew Pub, and next to the Transit Center at what's called the Flagpole parking lot. So given your support of the project, but the obvious conflict of interest, how would you, as mayor, participate when and if there is any future discussion of this project?
I think wherever it goes, it's going to be a benefit to the downtown, so I'm a little bit agnostic as to the location, whether it goes at the Transit Center or the Brew Pub lot or the Sandridge lot. Whenever there is an opportunity or concern that there would be a conflict, we check with the city attorney, and he usually advises us whether we should either make a disclosure or whether we should recuse ourselves. On something like a gondola, it likely would be a disclosure because there would not be a direct financial benefit. A direct financial benefit would be it going to my roof. Or so I would have to wait and see on that. I know I am in favor of that as part of a much larger transportation plan for the city. I'd also like to see a better connection between Park City Mountain Resort and probably the bottom of the street somewhere.
Yeah. So who would that really serve, though, the gondola? I mean, if it wasn't people from the TMI. I mean, locals wouldn't get on it unless they lived maybe in the Galleria.
Well, I wish I could take credit for all the people on Main Street at TMI, but we only house 150 of them at a time. I think that the benefit would be that Deer Valley would have an additional base. And if you spend any time up at Deer Valley in the evening, everybody comes down to Main Street. You've got a tremendous number of cars and shuttles that drive down that street to go out to dinner and to shop. And the type of gondola I'd be in favor of is one that would run late into the night, so those people don't have to take vehicles. The whole goal of using those skier connections is to get people out of cars.
All right, thanks.
Jack, the City Council, as well as Summit County, just made an investment in the Wasatch Summit Regional Plan that has to do with some of the resort connections between the Wasatch Front and the Wasatch Back. I wonder whether you see that as an important thing for the city to participate in, and just talk a little bit about the importance of how the mountains are developed.
Thank you. I think that's a great question. Having worked in Salt Lake City in planning, having gone to school in mass transit design and geography and planning and architecture, I think I understand the nature of transportation. I think it's a mass transit systems like that are urban tools for an urban environment. And I think as a small town, we have a whole different set of circumstances, a whole different set of values than the Wasatch Front. I don't believe that we're interested in being a suburb of Salt Lake City. And I think that that connectivity begins to push us in that direction and change our character. So I hold true to the values that I think are the foundation of our community, small town.
What about some of the gondolas and connections that, you know, we're kind of loving the Wasatch to death, and just as skiers?
Well, since I've been one of those skiers that crossed from Brighton to Park City in 1958, I do support the notion of over-the-snow connectivity, and I think there are some 30-year-old plans that demonstrated some of those ideas. But the notion that we're doing some sort of magic zoom through tunnels, mass transit, I don't think are in the interest of our community, because it changes our character, turns us into a suburban hub, and moves us away from the small town.
But lifts, ski lifts connecting the Wasatch Front and the Wasatch Back might be a good idea?
I think that that's a possibility, but that begs broader study. We need to understand the environmental impacts. We need to go through the public process that we seem to put at the end of most of our approvals, and it should be happening at the beginning of that process.
Thanks.
Jay, your question for Andy.
Andy, as the mayor of Park City, you would have the opportunity to welcome a cast of high-profile people to the town, perhaps even the president. If President Obama visited Park City while you were mayor and you had the chance to chat with him, what policy of his would you tell him is good for Park City, and what policy would you tell him hurts the city?
Wow. That wasn't one I studied for, Jay. As far as a policy, I think that would be important to us is a sensible work program or immigration program. I think being a resort town, our workforce is critical. I think we have a large Hispanic workforce, and that's a problem. So I would encourage him to address that. As far as negative policies?
To Park City, yes.
To Park City? Nothing comes to mind immediately. I'd have
so,
to think
so nothing
about
of President Obama's administration is negative to Park City?
That's not what I'm saying. I just haven't considered it. I think right now, in general, I would say everybody needs to get back to work, and he needs to put on his hat and build consensus, but that's not entirely on him. So, but that would be my overarching thought, is the government needs to get back to work, and they need to be reasonable about things.
Okay, thank you.
If any of you in the audience have a question for the candidate, now would be a good time to start making your way to the microphone. We've got one last question from Lynn here, and then we're going to start accepting questions from you. Again, for those of you who may be at home and have a question, you can call into Andy. The number is 435-901-8805. And for those of you on Twitter, you can tweet #ParkCity. So all of those of you at the mic, please identify yourself and direct your question. I'd also like to know where you live. And direct your question, please, to just one candidate. We don't have time for everybody to answer the same question. Thanks.
My name is Chris Robinson. I live out on Old Ranch Road, outside the city limits. Want to congratulate everyone that's here tonight, especially the candidates, and hope you brought your sunscreen. My question is for Jack. While there may be a moat around Park City, there is a rest of Summit County in the Snyderville Basin to deal with. What opportunities and challenges do you see in dealing with Summit County government, especially, and with the other citizens and businesses in the basin?
Thank you. Excellent question. Obviously, we do have connectivity with Summit County. We have our sewer, water, power, gas. We know which way the sewer runs. And it's essential that we have a positive relationship with the county and that we help assist them in becoming more node-like, developing in closer clusters, and we support them in moving to closer town centers at Kimball's Junction and other places because we don't think that we want to be more like Summit County, but I think they want to be more like us. And they'd like to have the money that we have to deal with in our community to help us resolve some of our problems. And so it's important that we keep up the dialogue between the county and the city, but it's also important that we respect our differences.
Thanks, Jack. And actually, Lynn had a question for you also, and I skipped her. It is really
skipped
warm
me
up here. But Lynn has a question for you also before we get to the rest of the audience here.
Thank you.
Okay, Jack, I hear you use the word aesthetic, the aesthetic value a lot in town, and 250,000 square feet of parking at Treasure Hill, never mind the construction of 1.2 million square feet. If this deal is not negotiated by the end of the year or by the end of Dana Williams' term, and if you were to take on this in negotiation, what is your sense of aesthetics, and how would you deal with that? How do you look at Treasure Hill?
Well, first of all, I've had a long discussion with the city attorney with regard to a project that is before The Planning Commission has been before the Planning Commission and will become part of any discussion that any member that sits on this table this evening. And so we have to be very careful and we have to be objective about the future propriety of any discussion we have. That said, that project came before the Planning Commission while I was chair, and it presented ideas and concepts. It presented 10-story solutions. It presented photographs and images from Chicago and San Francisco, saying that they thought that this was the vernacular that they were looking for. And they received significant and serious response from the public that I think was legitimate in terms of the comments with regard to being consistent to the code. And that said, assume what you may beyond this point, but I'm consistent with my values of small town. Thank you.
Okay, your name and to whom is your question directed?
To all of them. My name is Gerard Brunetti. I'm going to make this really quick. What have you done to close the loophole that Raleigh Studios created that almost cost this community $70 million? Why not a tourist train from Kimball Junction that comes into town? Tourist development. Is it hard to follow on the heels of a great mayor, both of you? What are you doing to save our snow, which is why we're all here?
Well, those are a lot of questions, so pick one.
Community Performance Center for the youth. What are we doing to keep the youth in this community?
Which one would you like answered? To whom would you like to address it?
To all of them. I would go with the loophole Raleigh Studios created, and what are you doing to keep the youth in our community?
So that goes to one of the incumbents. I'll choose Cindy.
Oh, gee, thanks. I really don't know what loophole you're talking about. The Raleigh Studios out in the studio parcel that is been approved out in on Quinn's is probably not going to be a Raleigh studio. But
they broke ground in the newspaper not that many days ago. What I'm talking about is the court case. If we didn't let them put them in, that would have cost this community $70 million of its tax money.
Well,
that is what I want to know. What are you doing to close that loophole that was created that cost us?
Sir, it's settled. So, it's a settled, negotiated. That's why it's groundbreaking.
Yeah. So
there is no more lawsuit.
But since that loophole is still there.
No, there is no more loophole. The lawsuit is settled.
Right, the lawsuit is settled, but what if somebody else comes along and decides, hey, let's see if we can do this again.
Once again, these are property that was in the county, and the county had a lawsuit with the developer. It was not with Raleigh Studios. However, the developer had quite a bit of pull in the state legislature. And the state legislature really urged us to settle that lawsuit. And we decided it was either going to be settled by the state legislature or settled by the county, and we thought it was better if the city settled it themselves since it was on our border. And so we did a settlement negotiation for that.
Was it forced upon us, and how do we stop that from happening again?
There's six people behind you.
I elect different people down in the state legislature.
All right, your name and to whom is your question directed?
Hi, my name is Jennifer. I live in Park City. My question
Where in Park City?
Oh, I'm sorry. I live in Park Meadows.
Thank you.
That's what I meant to say. So my question is very simple and calm, and it's directed to Andy. The theme of the topic is water, our precious resource, as Tim says. And I wanted to know what your thoughts are as the potential future mayor in terms of water conservation or building future infrastructure, water rates that go up every year. We're the second driest state in the United States with extremely expensive culinary water. And lastly, xeriscaping or buying back turf. Any of those topics.
Well, thank you, Jennifer, and namaste.
But as far as water conservation goes, I think it's something that we have not done enough education in this community. I think we have opportunities to change our code so we can require new projects to do a much better job with water conservation. I'm pretty familiar with some easy things you can do on that because I've done them at the hotel. I've replaced all my toilets with low flow. We've put in things like waterless urinals. We've put in low flow fixtures. We got rid of our pool, which was a little radical. And so I think those are things that people could easily do in their homes and save a lot of water. As far as xeriscaping, it's also something we should focus on. We may not want to entirely xeriscape because there are some concerns about creating heat sinks at that point, but I do think there's opportunities to use native grasses and drip irrigation systems to improve things.
Thank you. Hi, I'm Kyra Parkhurst, and this is what I like about Park City. They serve beer at their meetings, but anyhow, I hate controversy, so bear with me. I was driving round and round and round today out at the junction and going around a circle and around a circle, going from Walmart to Whole Foods to TJ Maxx to Bed Bath & Beyond, and now I can see that I can even grab a hamburger at Five Guys. And for a moment, I thought, am I back in Cleveland in the suburbs? And luckily, our mountains were big enough. When I looked up, they brought me back to reality, and I was like, whew, okay, I'm not there. So this reminded me of some things that were said at the last debate. And Andy, you said that you had a vision that in 20 years, if you close your eyes, it's still going to feel like Park City. At the same time, you said that there are 3 million people who are going to be living at the Wasatch Front, and we need to be prepared for them. You talked about getting the possibility of a train from Salt Lake, transportation to get for the people from the junction to Main Street, the development of Bonanza into 3 or 4 stories tall, a possible transit line from that area to Main Street, the connection of all 3 resorts, the joining of the Wasatch back to the Wasatch Front, a gondola connecting Deer Valley to Main Street, a possible transit to connect the base of Deer Valley to Main Street, the addition of another 5-star hotel on Treasure Mountain. All this scares me, and this is all in the initial thought process. We know what happens to projects as they move along. Treasure Hill was approved for 430,000 square feet, yet the plans that were submitted were about 1.2 million square feet.
Would you get to your question, please?
Yes.
Thank you.
If this sounds, I guess I feel like we will lose and we're going to become lost. People come up to Park City for the treasure that it is. So, Andy, tell me, how 20 years from now, and all this is going on, and I close my eyes, how will it still feel like Park City to me?
I don't think I can possibly answer a 3-minute question in 1 minute. But I didn't say that if you close your eyes. I wanted to look and feel like Park City. No, I want to look and feel like Park City with your eyes open. But I think the challenge we face is a certain amount of growth is inevitable. The outward pressures, there's nothing we can do about those. We can't build a wall high enough or a moat deep enough. So we're going to have to work with our regional partners. But as far as the connections for our community, I believe we can take more people in this community and still maintain our small town feel and that sense of community. I don't believe we can take more cars. I believe cars are the antithesis of community. They separate people, they congest, they pollute, and we need to work for solutions. And I don't know what those solutions are. It might not be a train, but whatever it is, we need to start planning now for the pressures that are going to be put on us for the next 10 or 20 years.
Thanks. But is more better?
Okay, your name and to whom is your question directed?
Kathleen Metcalf. I'm a resident of Park Meadows for 24 years. And Mary Windsor, I'm going to shoot this towards you. My neighbors and I have been curious about the potential reservoir, the potential of a reservoir in Round Valley. And when we've talked about this, we've concluded that water conservation is the essential starting point when considering the significant impact and expense of building additional water supply infrastructure. And to start this conversation, we've actually started a website called waterwiseparkcity.com. And most of you have accepted our invitation to post a careful statement regarding your position on water issues on that website, and I want to thank all of you that have done that and make everyone aware that you can read these carefully thought-out statements about water issues from all these candidates.
Right, so what's your question to Mary?
Okay, my question to Mary then is, what do you see the City Council's role in the issue of water conservation?
Well, I think when we talk about xeriscaping, back in, I think you were here then, Kathy, I mean, in the 80s, we used to have community classes to teach us all to xeriscape. And City Park, we had a community event where we turned out and we actually planted drought-resistant plants in that area. It, along the way, it fell out of favor, and even to the point where the city was actually putting grass on their property, so it went by the wayside. But I've had probably 2 hours of trying to understand our water situation. I think what I'm coming to is that we are being very unrealistic, and I think as a council, the council needs to start being more proactive and being more honest with the citizenry about what we could potentially face if we had one of the tunnels collapse or something like that, because I think the time is now and we can no longer wait. So if I were on the council, that would be something I would help try to initiate starting now.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Clay Stewart. I live in Park Meadows, and I have a question for Jack. Hi, Jack.
Hi, Clay.
The general plan is being rewritten right now. Why is it being rewritten? What are the major changes being proposed? And if you're elected mayor, how would you want to redirect the policies that are being considered right now, if any?
Good question. The general plan is taking slow evolution as we move through this process at the Planning Commission. These are open policies. These are open discussions. We've had meetings and public input that we've called for at 11:30 p.m. I don't think that's an appropriate format to get public input and a transparent process. So I think that we need to change that criteria and open it up to a more appropriate hour for participation from the public. This is our guiding document for every decision that we'll make and how we transform our land management code. There are some critical issues in this format. There's some dramatic changes in here. It's been given to us piecemeal, and we've also had missing pages at the Planning Commission. We're willing to put in extra time, extra effort, but I don't want to lose the input and the transparency of this process.
So how would that change under your leadership?
So I would make sure that we reached out to the community for participation, just like we did during the visioning process. Special meetings, going to neighborhoods, reaching out to the community, and giving the public an opportunity to weigh in with regard to these issues. You know, it seems like we're hell-bent to get this thing worked out by the end of the year. And I'd rather have it, I want to rush to the wrong solution. I think it's important to get it right, because everything that we do from this point on has its basis in the general plan.
Great, thanks.
Hi, my name is Katie Wright. I live in Prospector. I believe that nonprofit organizations are as critical as good government and robust business to a vibrant Park City. So my question is, I'd love to hear specifically about your service to our local nonprofits and how, if at all, the city's relationship with them shall evolve in the future.
So who do you want to ask that to?
The mayoral candidates.
Okay, there's two. Go ahead.
Thanks.
I'll start. I think all of the city council members have somewhere between 7 and 9 nonprofits that they are liaison to. It's not unique to any one of them. Some have more than other. I think Liza has more than anybody. And so it's essential that they keep that liaison and participate with those nonprofits and find out what's going. It's not a place where we define our goals. It's a place where we listen to the community and participate and unfold what's going on. And I think it's a great opportunity for our community to report on those as they do and engage in them as they should. My specific service to nonprofits have been with regard to the Park City Day School, which I am a board member on, where I have designed their new middle school at no cost to them because I felt that it was an important part of our community and one that made a huge difference when my youngest daughter was going through the educational process. It was a community that was outside of a public school system, and it provided needs, special needs, that could address her concerns.
It's a great question, Katie, and I think the city does a nice job of setting things up here, but it's really the 85 nonprofits in town that make this town great. They do amazing things for us. As far as my personal service, 20 years ago I began as a board member on Mountain Trails. I've served at least a dozen years on the HPCA, which is the Downtown Business Alliance, including almost 2 years as their president, which is really what brought me to my involvement in local government. On council, I serve on somewhere between 9 and 12 boards, which range from open space to recreation to transportation. And then I'm also part of several independent projects. One is a Save Our Snow 3 project that's focused on climate change. I'm also a founding member of Trails Utah, which is a statewide version of Mountain Trails. I'm working on an entrepreneurs group as well.
Okay, Monica.
All right. My name is Monica Gertner. I'm from KPCW. I have a question from Dave Dorsey, who asked this via Facebook. This is for Andy. You may be the youngest person in the room at this forum. What does Park City have to do to allow young adults and families to become and remain citizens of Park City without winning the lottery or inheriting a home?
That's a great question. I feel like I won the lottery, the fact I can actually live in town and enjoy Park City. I'm very fortunate. I think it boils down to a couple of simple answers, but not simple solutions, and that is we need good jobs with livable wages. We need to be able to provide jobs for our younger workers that aren't resort-based because those jobs aren't high-paying. And we also need to have affordable housing options and or attainable housing options, and I see a couple of opportunities for those, Park City Heights probably being the first one, but I also think Lower Park. We'll have some opportunities there, and hopefully Bonanza Park and the city will continue to look for other options. Things like Snow Creek, I think, was a fantastic addition to this town.
Okay, Andy.
My name is Andy Bernhardt. I'm with the Park Record. I've taken a phone-in call from Karen Terzian. Karen asks all the council candidates, are you for or against the Silly Market on or off Main Street?
All right, that's a for, how do we say, for or against?
You make the call. For
yes or no?
Yes,
I
yes
mean,
no,
tell,
for
tell us
or
how
against.
They want, how do we want them to answer that?
You could answer it with a yes or no and a very brief why.
Go ahead, Cindy.
I'm for it on Main Street. The Main Street Business Alliance has I'm saying that wrong, the Historic Park City Business Alliance has worked with the Park Silly community, and they've worked out an agreement, and I think it's working for everybody right now, but I think it needs to be evaluated to make sure we continue to meet our goals.
Tim?
I am in favor of the Silly Market on Main Street.
Mary?
I'm trying to decide what off means, but isn't it on now?
It's on Main Street
on
now.
Lower Main.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm in favor of the Silly Market, provided that we really listen to the full-time merchants on Main Street. Initially, I was not, because so many of them spoke out and felt that it was hurting their businesses. So, yes, as long as it's not hurting the full-time business owners who pay taxes year-round.
And Alex?
I'm for it. We are we constantly evaluate how the impacts are affecting our Main Street merchants. I think Andy said it well earlier, where the energy and the excitement that it brings are on the positive side, and then there are some negative sides that we just deal with and evaluate every year before we renew their contract.
And Andy answered this kind of earlier. Jack, why don't you just throw in your two cents there?
I mean, I'm married to a European, and we go there every other year, and I see markets in every one of those communities. But what's unique about them is that they really enroll the merchants in those neighborhoods to roll out onto the street. So I think we need to do a better job of connecting with the merchants that exist on Main Street so we're not creating a conflict when we create these opportunities in these businesses. And we tend to bring in outside businesses.
And if we don't, then we shouldn't have it?
No, I'm saying that the solution is to enroll them and include them.
All right. Your question, and to whom? Is it directed?
Good evening, Keith Herbert, Old Town. And I'd like to direct this question to Tim, and it's about the 800-pound gorilla in the house. And the question is, what actions do you think the council should take beyond pushing for more police enforcement to develop a community program to educate the community, including but not limited to our school students, regarding our drug problem, and to provide avenues to encourage citizens to just say no?
Well, I think the first step is to acknowledge that a drug problem is present and does exist. And I can remember the days when there was this majority report or something that we were doing, which was trying to convince everybody that we didn't have a drug problem, that the majority of students didn't participate in drugs recreationally or any other way. And I think that that really wasn't the case. And, you know, things have come home to roost. So I think, first of all, it's to get bring awareness to the fact that there is an issue and be realistic about that. And then as far as what the police can do, you know, I like police to be involved in the community on the streets, on their bicycles. I love to see that. And in the schools, I think they should have a presence. I think that they should be viewed as a important and safe part of the community that kids can turn to and go to, not something to be feared. So I think it's, you know, acknowledging that we have an issue and then getting the police to engage at a very intimate level with the kids in the community.
Thanks.
Hi, my name is Linda Lukanowski. I've been in Park City almost 20 years, 19 of those in Park Meadows, and I'm kind of in between housing at the moment, temporarily actually living in Treasure Mountain Inn. But my shop is also there, so it's okay. It's a great commute. I'm not driving my car, Andy.
Thank you.
All right, my question is first for Jack and then for Andy. I haven't heard much talk about small businesses within this community. So I first would like to hear from you on what role you feel that small businesses play within our community and what it is that you bring to the table to support them.
I'll be glad to start with that one. Like you, I started my small business in the TMI. And I think my grandfather lived in a building in a boarding house that went right in the same location. I think they're fundamental to the makeup of a small town. Big businesses obviously take place, and they're becoming bigger and larger, and they want more square footage. But small businesses in a small town give us a broad variety of services and activities that we need here. Just like we need a broad cross-section of population and a demographic of old, middle, and young, like me, that we also need to have businesses that are a scale and scope that can bring some of these smaller activities, and they also bring the character and uniqueness to the town.
Well, how do you do that, Jack? I mean, do you incentivize them?
I think you encourage them, and whether or not you incentivize them, I think you create the opportunity for smaller square footage, smaller footprints, instead of encouraging larger footprints, larger square footages.
Okay, your question, and oh, Andy's back.
Andy's back.
I get to take a stab at this, don't I?
Go ahead.
I think when we talk about our small town and our character, we often overlook our small businesses. Those are run by our friends and our neighbors, and they're really what make our town stand out from most any other town. All of our mom-and-pop businesses and the lack of chains and franchises. So I think we absolutely have to work with them. I think I'll go back to a success story, which is the Downtown Business Alliance, the HPCA, and the city were able to work together on the downtown improvements. The merchants told them what was needed. We needed gathering spaces to bring people to the street. We needed better sidewalks. We needed better lighting. And the parties were able to work together and create, hopefully, a much better atmosphere that those businesses will continue to thrive in. I think we also need to take into account our support businesses. Where did the sign shops and the locksmiths and the copy shops go? And I think some of our redevelopment areas might be excellent opportunities to keep those support businesses from leaking out to the county, and that will also reduce our traffic. And then last, I think we need to start thinking who is going to be the next generation of young business people, and that's why I'm working on a business incubation process to try to help foster that growth.
Thanks.
Didn't mean to cut you off, Andy. We have another phone-in question. This is directed to you, Jack Thomas. It is from Mike Wong from Park Meadows. And Mike would like to know, since you're 8 years on the Planning Commission, how much growth has Park City seen as it relates to second home and hotel room growth?
So second homeowners, I think of that equation has slipped quite a bit. In 10 years, I believe the second homeowners have grown from being somewhere in the realm of 30% of the homes in our community to more like 70% of the homes in the community. So that equation shows you that there's, even though our population is the same, the demographic is changing. And so I think it's important that we maintain policies that don't push people out of our residential neighborhoods. For instance, it's important that we not allow nightly rentals in residential, primarily single-family residential neighborhoods. That's something that I've supported, and I think that we have seen that whittled away at piece by piece, home by home, by an overruling by the city council. And so it's a big problem, and I can see stop there, so I'll slow down.
I didn't know if Andy wanted to give a reply to that also. My name's Neil Krasnick. I live on the north end of City Park, and this first statement is not the question, okay? For all you people up there, your platform is keep Park City as Park City, but you all have your own opinion of what that is. Growth is certain. So how do we adapt what we want to fit into the future of what you want Park City to be? Now, could you define, and this is for Jack and Andy, could you define how we stay small but continue with growth, and that's i.e. make money? So whoever wants to go for, and you know what? That's just something to think about. If you can't answer it in 60 seconds, don't.
They can do it.
I'll lead off on that one. I think physically, as I mentioned earlier, we can't stay small. We're going to have a lot of people in town. I think the good news is most of our development within the city boundaries is done. At this point, other than a few projects, it's largely going to be infill, and I think we need to be very proactive and smart about that infill and build things that are going to complement this community, not just increase the competition.
I was going to work my George Carlin joke into this, but I don't think I will.
You don't have to answer this. This is...
I think that We have to preserve our values first and foremost. They're foundations. They're not negotiable. They're not to be weighed against something that is additional density and makes our community transform into something that's a mountain urban place. So when I say small scale, I think I'm worried about what happens with in the commercial districts of what happens in the first 1 to 3, maybe 4 stories. So is there an opportunity for some increased density in some of those places to get more affordable housing? Perhaps. But it's a process again that we move through. And we have to weigh and evaluate everything that we do based on those foundation principles. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hey, I have another question from Facebook. I apologize for about to butcher Kenneth's name, but Kenneth Gaudet had a question for the mayoral candidates. He says, for argument's sake, let's say winter is getting shorter and summer is getting longer. Where do you see the non-snow-based tourism revenue coming from in the near and distant future, and how do you see the city becoming involved?
I'll be glad to jump into that one first. Obviously, we need to pick up business in our shoulder seasons and our summer. Let's start with an Oktoberfest. We could start at the set right after this meeting. I think that we do need to think in terms of incubation businesses. I think we need a stronger relationship with the University of Utah. There's a planning department that is begging to participate and be involved in hypothetical studies of parts of our community. We saw that happen on Iron Horse Drive. We saw 17 exciting ideas come into our community that were adaptive reuse. That means using the existing footings and foundations in a neighborhood and doing 17 dramatically different ideas. You know, I think that we need to build more opportunities like that for groups that don't have a vested interest or a connection with the development group to participate on ideas. We can also do that with the computer science department of the University of Utah and some of the incredible minds that we have in our community in the high-tech industry to participate and roll and make us the Bauhaus of technology and art and science that we can be. We could rival the Aspen Institute.
Andy?
I think this is a real concern, and all the resort towns are talking about it now. How do you shift over? One of our obvious assets is our trails. That's something that we are world-renowned for, and our resorts are investing in those trails, and I think that's going to fuel some of our summer business. I think Jack hit on it pretty hard, that we do need to work on our economic diversity, and I think we're going to need to settle on a couple of things to focus on. I think some of the obvious starting points are things like high-altitude training, medical vacations, expanding our arts and culture opportunities, doing a little bit more with events, and I think there might be opportunity to have a small college in town. So I think those are all things we need to look into and start focusing on sooner than later.
Did you say medical vacation?
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about that.
That's actually something I learned recently that is very popular here. Apparently we have some of the top plastic surgeons in the country or in the world, and people will take a medical vacation. They'll have their procedure done, and then they will stay at a nice hotel and wait for 2 weeks in the room enjoying room service and massages.
So you all think that's a great idea? Yeah? Great economic diversity?
Hi, Corey from KPCW. I have a question from Facebook from Mark Del Vecchio, who would like each candidate to define the middle class. So, Leslie, I'll let you choose who should answer that.
Okay, we've got 13 minutes left. We only have a couple people standing, so I think we can handle this. And I think that's an interesting question. Define the middle class.
Well, the middle class in Park City isn't the middle class anywhere in the United States. The middle class in our community is really the upper middle class. And so we're missing that component of our community that is truly middle class, or we're being pushed out. And so the way we deal with that in the future is we create opportunities, as we've talked about a moment ago, create a think tank of opportunities and possibilities and clean industries and technology in our community so that we have jobs and opportunities for our children and our children's children, because they are indeed our future to be here.
Andy?
I think Jack nailed that one. I can't add a lot to it, but I think really what we typically call the middle class in this town is the people that are still working, the people that haven't retired here, or the folks that don't have entry-level resort jobs. So it's a broad category.
Or get to take medical vacations. Alex.
Actually, I do have a number or a range, but I would say is middle class. We have an adjusted gross income in Summit County, somewhere around $80,000. And I think that would be a good place to start to look at. And that translates into being able to afford a house in the $250,000 range, maybe $300,000 at the outside. So that, to me, is our middle class. They're able to live here by providing living wages. There aren't that many $80,000, $100,000 jobs in Park City, and I think that should be our focus. We need to move in that direction and encourage other businesses to come in and provide that.
Okay. Mary, what's the middle class?
I agree with what Jack said. Our middle class doesn't equate to the average middle class in the United States, but we do have people that are making less than $80,000, and many of them have to work two jobs to do it. And part of the reason that I wanted to run was I felt that we weren't honoring and trying to keep in place the people that are here that came to so many of the hearings and talked to us about the fact that they were workforce and that they needed help when we were about to move the substation below their condos. So I think we're naive about the people that are here that we could still keep in our community and have that diversity.
Tim?
The middle class is different from the workforce class, and we've done a pretty good job of addressing the housing needs of workforce. We need to continue to put resources and focus in there. But the middle class is that group who bought homes between $300,000 and $500,000 in places like Prospector and Park Meadows. And they're in, but over time, they are the disappearing class because those homes do not exist anymore in Park City. And that is a major problem because you're either in or you're locked out. And if you're locked out, there's nothing to buy in the $300,000 to $500,000 range. And over time, we're going to lose those who are already here, and we will not have a middle class, and that will dramatically change the fundamental fabric of this community.
All right. And Cindy?
Well, I see two middle-class people out there. I have two daughters that... Oh, there's more middle-class people back there? Well, welcome. You know, we have spoken about before tonight, middle-class is the working people of Park City. And people that live here, and you know, my daughter's lucky to have a teaching job here, and that is considered a great job. And work hard and keep that job, okay? And you know, we need the middle class, and as I spoke of before, I think we should work hard to support it with attainable housing opportunities and good jobs. And one way I think we can do the good jobs is that the city can approach a broadband initiative where we start bringing high-speed internet to all of our community. And that will support the small businesses that we have that need to have faster internet connections. It'll support the people that are doing businesses in their homes, and it will bring new businesses here. So I suggest that we come together as a community and figure out how we can get that high-speed internet across the board.
Okay, thanks. We've got about 4 minutes here, so we've got to make things real quick. So to a candidate, please. And
I have a lightning round question.
Okay.
And it involves a master plan. In Park City, I have seen us do several general plans over the years. They've been great. We've all been in these rooms, and we've visioned, and we've talked about the quality of life in Park City and what we need to do. And not one council I've ever seen has changed where the rubber really meets the road, and that's the land management code. And what happens is, in our master plan, the land management code really says, or the master plan tells the land management code, you need to decrease density, but nobody has had the guts to decrease density because it means lawsuits typically. My lightning round question is to you is, if there is something in the general plan that you want to put into the land management code that means a decrease in density and you are faced with potential lawsuits from developers, would you spend city money to defend your right to downzone in some cases? So it's lightning round, yes or no?
Alex.
No. Yes.
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 Okay.
Okay. That was Allison Child. Okay, real quick.
Carol Fontana, Old Town. The lighting code is being changed. I know that work started on that last spring for the mayoral candidates. How do you see historical Main Street lit in the future?
Carol, I think it's a commercial district and it requires some lighting. I know there are residents that would prefer it be dark, but I think the lights can be used to highlight our historic structures. It's a safety issue, and I think it creates a better district for everyone.
I'd like to see our city sleep occasionally. And I think that that's just like we have timers on our house lighting and we dim it down at some hour in the evening. I think it's appropriate that the city sleeps at some point, even Main Street. Not to say that I'm want to change safety lighting and sidewalk lighting and wayfinding, but I do think that we should have a code that enforces and reduces the amount of night lighting after whatever that appropriate hour is, part of the public discussion again, that maybe that's at 1:30 a.m. Thank
okay.
you.
David Bells, yours is going to be the last question because we've got closing statements to wrap up here.
Okay. My name is David Bells, and I've lived and worked in Old Town for 23 years. And I want to ask Mary that I know for numerous years you fought very diligently this town lift ski bridge, and I understand you have even recently stated you think it was a mistake. And I wanted to know if this was so, and if so, what your vision for the continued redevelopment and infill for Old Town and whether it needs to be changed or what your opinion is of that.
Well, I do think we have to be very careful about our infill, and that's one thing I spoke of today at Rotary. The reason I think the consequences of the town lift were what we're facing with the Sweeney family development. And most of us could see that were against it, could see that it would raise the value of the homes in Old Town and it would drive out people because then we would go to nightly rental, which is just what's happened to the fabric of Old Town. And so I was trying to put a price to it. I wonder if the buyout for the Sweeneys was $100 million, then how many of us would say, okay, it cost us this much to take that ride on the town lift. So, I mean, it's just simply the consequence of it, David.
All right, thanks. I'm going to have to leave it at that. Again, thank you to all of your questions. Some great ones out there. Appreciate that. We're going to wrap things up here now. I asked them to come prepare the candidates with 30-second closing statements. We're going to start with Andy.
Okay, thank you.
And I'm going to keep you to 30 seconds. So,
start now, then. At the end of the day, the mayor's position is a job. And when you look to hire somebody for a job, you look for who is the most experienced and the most dedicated candidate. And you also, if you have the opportunity, will promote from within because you know who you're going to get. I know this job. I've been serving on council. I've immersed myself in the issues. I've established the right relationships, and I'll be prepared. As mayor, I will focus on connecting this community physically, digitally, and most importantly, socially. So thank you, everyone. I encourage you to get out and vote. Early voting started, and I encourage you to vote for me.
Okay, Jack Thomas. 30 seconds or less.
Change is inevitable, but progress is not, unless we do this in a way that involves a process of design, process of evolution of ideas, and open government, and we have a mayor that has the education and skills necessary to navigate through these changes. Having had that experience and demonstrated that through my career as an architect of over 25 years, I think I can make sure that we arrive at solutions that are win-win solutions that are practical, economical, and creative. Thank you.
Thanks. Cindy Matsumoto.
Well, thank you for coming here tonight, and thank you for letting me serve you for the past 4 years. It has been interesting, exciting, and a lot of fun, and I've thoroughly enjoyed it. And I've gained a lot of experience and knowledge that I think will be beneficial going forward, and I would love the chance to do it again. Thank you.
Tim Haney.
I'm a big believer in process. That was one of the reasons that I jumped into this as soon as the filing window opened up, because I thought that the process could be improved by incumbents not running unopposed, as has happened in those three communities that have called off their elections. So far, the process has been just fabulous. I'm having a great time. I've enjoyed these forums immensely, much to my surprise, and then walking neighborhoods has been a great experience as well. I don't like yard signs, but I have them. I also have reusable grocery bags that are out there on a table. Please feel free to take one. I'm very proud of those. Good listener. I'm very diligent. I bring energy and intensity and focus to the process, and that's why I think I would make a good city council person for you.
Mary Winsor.
The reason I decided to run was I felt I had some ideas that I wanted to put out and see if there were other citizens that would resonate with those ideas. I think we have to be very careful that we don't approve a general plan that is not steadfast enough for the developmental pressures that we are going to be facing in the near future. I do also think that failure is taking the path that everyone else does, and success is making your own path, and that's why I'm running for Park City.
And Alex Butwinski.
I have a 4-year track record of listening, analyzing, and making decisions, which have kept us on a path of careful growth, balanced budgets, and providing levels of service that citizens and visitors have come to expect. I haven't forged invaluable relationships at the state legislature, and I'm working with the county on an economic development plan that will provide us all with a good economic future. I'll go with that. I've championed affordable middle-class housing. I don't know why I can't read this. I'm sorry. But I'll just go with, at the end of it, it's important that we maintain our quality of life, that we do our growth in a manageable way, and I'd appreciate your vote.
You've been listening to a live candidate forum here at the Historic Egyptian Theater. Once again, a big thank you to our sponsors, River Horse on Main, Squatters Pub, Wasatch Beers, the Egyptian Theater, and Tesh Law Office. Big thank you to our volunteers behind the scenes. When you see all these names, you realize just something you think so simple takes a lot of bodies. So thank you. Roger Crawford, of course, our great volunteer engineer. Joel Bakken, Corey Gutzman, Mark Hopkins, John Wells, Hiram Summerhays, John Grip, Peter Mayhew, and Francie Eisenberg. Big thank you to the staff of both KPCW and the Park Record, Annie Bernhard, Cindy Bywater, Monica Gudner, Ethel Preston, Beth Fratkin, and, of course, my panelists here on stage, Lynn Peek, Jay Hamburger, Nan Noker. Of course, as we've told you, early voting starts. It's running through Friday, May 1st. November 1st. 10 to 2, so lunch hour, that's what you get. But a big, huge round of applause for our candidates. And just real quick all of you, and I think everybody here would say you would all make great mayors and great city council members. So thank you. I'm Leslie Thatcher, and on behalf of all of us here at KPCW and the Park Record, good night. This is KPCW Park City. Time for news.